Welcome to New Books in Political Science. My name is Heath Brown. Today I'll be talking with Michael Innes Jimenez, the author of Steel Barrio, The Great Mexican Migration to South Chicago, 1915 to 1940. I hope that you enjoy this interview with Mike. Welcome to New Books in Political Science. Today we'll be talking about the book Steel Barrio, The Great Mexican Migration to South Chicago, 1915 to 1940. Mike, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have read the book. Before we get to it, maybe you could talk just a little bit about where you are, what university you're affiliated with, where you were when you were writing the book. Tell us about yourself.
Well, this project started about 10 years ago in graduate school at the University of Iowa. I decided I wanted to take a look at a Midwestern Latino community. And I was drawn to Chicago because of its diversity and the fact that there's more than one Latino neighborhood that's distinct from the other. After I finished there, I taught in New Jersey for about 4 years, and I've been at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa since 2008. And this project, I wrapped it up about a year ago.
Great. Now, you're in an American Studies department. Are you trained as a historian?
I am. Yeah, my degree is in history, and I've always been interdisciplinary in my teaching and my research. The position that I got at Alabama is as a professor in an American Studies department. Right.
Okay, great. And I think the book really does speak to so many different disciplines, including political science. I think there's a lot of politics built into this specific story, but certainly political things that we can learn about immigration today, immigration politics, and things that are very contemporary. So let's get to the book. Why this time period, 1915 to 1940? Maybe you can talk a little bit about your choice of that time period, and maybe a little bit about what Chicago was like in this point in time. What were Mexican immigrants arriving to? What did Chicago look like during this time?
I started in 1915. So the book starts in 1915. The first significant, and by significant I mean about 250 Mexican immigrants come to the area or brought to the area by the railroads that had lines in the Southwest that were expanding in Chicago and needed maintenance of way workers. And so that's the beginning of a Mexican presence. Mexican American, when I use the term Mexican, I'm talking about both Mexican Americans and Mexican immigrants, depending on how they identify themselves. The starting point is because that's when the community starts. Chicago at that point, Mexican immigrants are just the latest, in many ways, they're just the latest group of ethnic immigrants. In the neighborhood that I focus on, South Chicago, before the Mexicans, there had been Italians and German and Polish and, it goes on and on. As most of us know, Chicago is has a very rich history of working class immigrants. Again, when I mentioned the diverse communities in Chicago, there were three significant populations in Chicago. The one I focus on in South Chicago, a community in back of the yard, which is a packing plant, Sinclair's a jungle, 30 years, 40 years later, and the near west side around Hull House. Those are the three main Mexican communities. And again, because of their industry, they feel different, although they're both very, very dirty working class neighborhoods that the city neglects because they're the home of the newest immigrant group.
Yeah, and so what did Mexican immigrants do for work when they arrived? Was there a sector that they were pulled into? You mentioned that they're pulled by the railroad industry, but once in Chicago, was there a place that work was to be found?
Those that came by railroad would frequently jump their contracts. They would be contracted along the border by an employment agency working for a railroad, and that would get them an advance on the transportation and food up to wherever their workstation is going to be. And once people got to Chicago and saw what the opportunities were in the city, they would jump or skip their contracts and enter either the steel mills in South Chicago or meatpacking in back of the yards, or even service sector jobs. And most of those folks lived on the near west side and you know, did service sector jobs in hotels or in or downtown businesses, loop businesses.
Yeah, and what was the, how welcomed to the city were these newcomers? This is, as you mentioned, a very diverse city, but how would you characterize the different ways that they were initially viewed and welcomed to Chicago?
Very mixed. In most of the neighborhoods, it was negative because of, again, you know, they were the latest working class immigrant from the country. As Mexicans came into South Chicago, that gave the other groups a chance to move up the ladder. And there's this shifting scale of whiteness, you know, and by this time, the Irish are considered white. When they first came here, they weren't. The Germans and the Polish are moving up. And then you have the Mexicans who, if the darker skinned Mexicans, really had a problem with being accepted. That one of the reasons they came, were brought into South Chicago, aside from the railroads, were the steel mill strikes in 1919. And because of the race riots, steel mill managers in South Chicago were very hesitant to hire too many African Americans. You know, there was the workforce there, but they were worried about riots by whites against the blacks in South Chicago, so they hired lighter-skinned Mexicans. And so, you know, there's a lot of politics and a lot of race going on with these decisions of who to hire.
Yeah. Now, one of the features of the book is the organizations that welcomed Mexican immigrants. And you write about some of these very specific groups that were in place and provided a whole range of services. Are there any specific groups that stand out to you that you might describe how they were formed, what they did? Do they look like the types of organizations that we would see today in Chicago providing for more recent Mexican or immigrants in general?
I'll answer that from the end first. The organizations today, and I touch on this at the beginning of the book in the introduction, the hometown associations today do a lot of what the mutual aid societies did in the 20s, and mutual aid societies and patriotic groups that, you know, and I talk about several of them of the 20s and 30s, you know, they served as a mutual aid society. In other words, they would, you'd pay monthly dues, and if you got sick, they would help pay your bills. If you died, they would pay for your funeral. And that's the original, one of the original functions of the organization. But then they also became social organizations. People would get together in the monthly meetings, and that became a one way to socialize, and it started creating more of a community. Several of these organizations by the Depression started to sponsor or start sports teams. And these sports teams were primarily baseball, some basketball in the winter. But, you know, that was the main pastime for a lot of the men during the Depression. You have with these organizations also a political voice, sometimes with the help of the the Mexican consul, sometimes in opposition to what the Mexican government wants. These organizations are there to try to protect the community. And one of the points that I argue is that although the Mexican workers were very pro-union, and that comes a lot, you know, for the most part from the Mexican Revolution, and they joined the union because of the discrimination, not only in the workplace, but in the union. They would join the union because they thought that was important, but they wouldn't identify as a union member. They would identify more as a member of a mutual aid society or a Mexican patriotic organization.
In the book, you make much of what Mexican-Americans did to their physical environment where they lived in order to create community. And you have some great photographs and images in the book. What are some of those things that were done to create in what are clearly very poor neighborhoods, but were done to the physical buildings and to the homes to create that sense of community that might have been lacking otherwise?
I think, you know, to make the distinctness, make distinctiveness, make you feel like home, you know, you had businesses on Commercial Avenue and other major streets in South Chicago that had Spanish language names. There were ads, you know, dance posters or just business ads in Spanish. It was very public. And you could get a lot of the amenities, a lot of Mexican food because of the communities in Chicago, Northwest Indiana. You can get fresh tortillas, you can get the fresh breads. It was, you know, trying as much as possible to recreate some of home, knowing that you're in a very polluted, dingy, drab, industrial environment. You know, just make it that much more livable. And another way they did that is the railroads, I hadn't mentioned when the railroads brought Mexicans up, they put a lot of the workers in boxcars. And there's boxcar colonies that could have been or could be found in Chicago all the way up into the 70s. These are sometimes men by themselves or solos, and sometimes with families would be given a boxcar as a house. And if you had your family, that would be the family residence. You'd have a stove in there for heating. And what people did with that is pretty amazing. They would, you know, make that home and put up a picket fence. You know, you have chickens, you have flowers, you put permanent lighting on the outside, and it, you know, made the best of the situation.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier the athletics.
Yes.
In the community. And this, in the book, is clearly more than just a passing thing. Why was the creation of these baseball teams, and you have some, again, you have some great photographs of the team pictures in the book, but why is baseball and the creation of these leagues more than just a passing thing? Why is it meaningful for these communities?
In a lot of different levels. There are several different levels. I think it's great for the kids and for the young adults that are on the team, you know, everything that goes around that we think of with a team sport, the teamwork, the camaraderie, the identification with the team. But for the community, it became a little bit more. These teams needed money to get uniforms and balls and bats. And the organizations, the mutual aid societies, and some other organizations that were organized as athletic clubs would hold dances. And these dances became community events. It was a big deal. You'd go to the dance sponsored by, you know, the Arrows, the Blue Arrows, or whatever group, whatever team. And there, you know, you have the sports team with not only with the players, but the community in dances. And then on top of that, what it meant to have a team you could root for as a community. South Chicago teams would play teams from other neighborhoods in Chicago and from Northwest Indiana. And, you know, think of high school sports today, you know, football in Texas as an extreme. Everybody, a lot of people in town identify with that team, and that creates, you know, a strong sense of community, whether the team wins or not.
Right. It does beg the question, would Mexican immigrants to Chicago be more likely to be Cubs fans or White Sox fans? Were there allegiances along those lines, or was professional level baseball irrelevant to the community at that point?
That's a great question, and I don't want to get in the middle of a Sox Cubs argument, but I think it depended. I didn't really find much discussion about that, but it did depend on what neighborhood. Because you had the people that were in the loop, and a few people above the loop in the Near West Side. And then you had people on the South Side that I would assume are Sox fans, since there's a very strong North-South divide in Chicago.
Right, right. And you write this as a historian, as in a time and place. But I wonder if you can, you know, to the extent possible, take us up to today. Are these communities still there in the same place? Did these Mexican immigrants stay in Chicago, stay in the country? Have you gone back to these places? What could you say about the nature of Mexican migration to South Chicago today? Is it there?
There is migration today. It's very vibrant, and Chicago has become a leader as far as immigrant rights and protecting immigrant communities. Let me throw a plug out there for a book, and then that deals with post-war Chicago Mexican and Puerto Ricans, and it's called Brown in the Windy City by Lilia Fernandez. It's the University of Chicago book, and it does a great job of focusing on Latino and Puerto Rican post-war community. To answer your question directly, Mexican South Chicago thrived post-war and, you know, went up and down with the steel industry. And there is a significant Mexican-American community in South Chicago today, but the South Chicago today post-steel is much different than it was, 40, 50 years ago. The Near West Side, the area that was the main Mexican community in the 20s and 30s and up and through the 40s, Mayor Daley had urban renewal in that area, and that's where they created or built the University of Illinois at Chicago. So most Mexican immigrants and Mexican-Americans that were there were relocated to the neighborhoods of Pilsen and Little Village, which is today the cultural and in many ways the political hub of Latino and Mexican-American, I should say, Chicago. And politics, politically today, you know, the most senior Latino in the House of Representatives is Puerto Rican Chicago Representative Luis Gutierrez, who's been very active in immigration issues.
Sorry, I really did enjoy the book. I think it just covers a lot of ground and just tells some really, really interesting stories. What's up next for you? Do you have another book project ahead of you? What is on your research agenda for the summer and for the year to come?
That's still under construction. I do have some articles and maybe a book project coming out of what's Immigration to the South, putting what's going on today in historical context. Since I've been down there since the beginning of HB 56 in Alabama and the coalitions that are being built between the African-American civil rights community and the immigration rights community, or immigrant rights community, I should say. But I also want to look at interwar Mexican communities in the Midwest or in the Northeast. There were communities in several other cities that developed differently, and I'd like to see how they developed and why they developed in that way.
Wonderful. Well, I hope you come back with your next book.
Thank
because
you.
I really enjoyed this book, Steel Barrio, The Great Mexican Migration to South Chicago, 1915 to 1940, published by NYU Press and available widely on the website, I'm sure on Amazon as well. Mike, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.